This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 196, where today AC and I sit down with Troy Hunt from Have I Been Pwned, recorded live from the MVP Summit in Redmond.
Is it the 20th?
May 20th.
May 20th.
No, March.
March 20th, 2019.
Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, workflows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No-code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC.
Oh, memory problems.
So professional, AC.
There's so many problems
here. It's like, here comes the date. Oh, crap, what's the date? Every week.
You had the date off. I had the month off.
Yeah.
I got to be in the worst shape.
Oh, we got the year right. I suppose we got that going for us.
Did we? Did we say 2019?
I did.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Perfect. Wouldn't be surprised if we said 2018.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so here we are.
Yep.
We're actually in person together for a change, which
it's
is
awkward.
Pretty cool. Yeah, like, whoa, it's you.
Yeah, man, it's good to hang out in your neck of the woods this week here at the MVP Summit.
Yeah, we're actually hanging out in Building 92 on campus, right opposite the company store.
Yep.
And here for MVP Summit and hanging out with a bunch of other MVPs, I suppose.
Yeah. This is the first time I've seen the new company store. It is...
It's pretty fancy.
Yeah, and the visitor center. I remember all this was under construction when I was here last time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it is. That's very nice.
Yeah, it's pretty fancy, huh?
So anyway, it's your first MVP Summit.
It is.
Yeah, how are you enjoying it?
Well, it's my first MVP Summit as an MVP.
Oh, where you're not allowed, where they people have to open the door for you.
That's right. Only because you need a badge to get through the door,
yeah,
not because, like...
Nobody's kissing your ass.
Yeah, exactly. We're not most valuable princesses.
Well,
some of us are.
Some of them are. We won't name those names.
Correct. They all shall stay nameless.
Yeah,
it's kind of a different event for me this time. Get to go to sessions and chill out and ask questions and don't have to present, so it's nice.
Yeah, you can actually get answers from your questions instead of being a speaker where you're not allowed to. You're allowed to sit down. You don't have to be forced to stand in the back of the room, right?
Yeah, exactly. I get a chair this time.
Yeah. What kind of stuff are you looking at? I mean, now we can't...
We
can't speak about what we've seen, but we can just talk about, like, you know, what we're...
Topics and
major
sort of areas. I'm splitting my time between Azure things and Office 365 things.
Gotcha.
So I spent some time around like containers and Kubernetes and stuff like that.
Mm.
And then also on Microsoft Graph topics mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, I've done a lot of Graph stuff, a lot of SharePoint stuff. Wanted to get over to some of the Azure stuff, but it's tough when...
It's other side of campus too.
Yeah, so there's a lot of people that are here and they have stuff split. Luckily, most of the SharePoint and Graph stuff is all over, and Teams is all over in like the Commons area of campus. So it's like, for those of you familiar with campus, it's Building 92 where the visitor center is and the store is, and then there's a Commons area which is kind of like the big, like, what did you guys call that? It's like a, it's not a shopping area, but there's like restaurants and there's like some rec stuff and
it's
a couple stores.
Yeah.
I don't want to call
like
it
a
mall,
little,
but.
It's like a mini little downtown Disney kind of, but Microsoft version.
Yeah, it's fair. That's fair. I mean, there's some offices here and you got a bunch of, you know, meeting rooms and stuff, even in the main building.
There's also like a bank and a post office and a hairdresser and and restaurants, and there's a bar that opens after a certain time of day so employees don't go super early and get hammered. Stuff like that. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, it's interesting. And you guys have got like ridiculously warm weather up here this year.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's totally unseasonable for Seattle. But I just like to say to everybody, it's like this all the time.
Yeah, right.
It's totally
Chamber
not.
Of Commerce weather.
It was 3 feet of snow not long ago.
Yeah.
And now it's summer.
Yeah. Mid 70s, topping out like the high 70s Fahrenheit freedom units.
But of course, you know, during the day, it's all business.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then, yeah, very serious stuff. And then in the evening, of course, it's all business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's just drunken business. So we were out last night and we had, you know, some beverages were consumed, of course. And we were actually out in Bellevue and you and I were sitting around a table chatting with some friends.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, AC's, you know, right behind AC is Troy Hunt. He runs Have I Been Pwned? Because he's a regional director from Australia. And so we should get, like, it'd be a great guest to have on the show.
Yep.
And he was deep in conversation with somebody, so I didn't feel like being that weird, creepy dude and tapping him on the shoulder.
Well, and we'd had a few drinks too, so you don't want to do that too. That'd be,
exactly.
Who knows, he may have had a few drinks too. We didn't want to, that's just awkward.
Yeah, exactly. Don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
So this morning, reached out to him just on the off chance, had some time, and he agreed to come on the show. So we've got a fantastic guest this week.
Yeah.
Really interesting space, sort of blowing up over the last, excuse the pun, I suppose it. Yeah.
That's okay.
It's blown up over the last couple of years, really.
Yeah.
With all the data breaches and things that have been publicized. And so we're really, really glad that he could spend 30 minutes, sit down with us and have a chat.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, you know, the thing that he's really known for, I think, is really all the security stuff and all the hacks that have gone on and all the big data breaches. But, you know, one of the things, you know, we got into with the interview that I think is probably one of the more interesting sides of it is how he's able to run this site on a shoestring budget. You know, it's still free, so it's not a revenue center for him. But how, like, the way the decisions he's made and the ways he's been able to take advantage of Azure and some of the third-party services like Cloudflare to deal with massive amounts of data in a very specific scenario, but also having to deal with massive spikes that come in, as he talked about, like the Italian TV bombed him. So,
and doing it as a personal project.
Maybe bombed him isn't the right word either.
Well, sort of traffic bombed him, I suppose.
There we go, that's better,
slammed him with traffic.
There you go, you got slammed by
but
the Italian TV.
Doing it as a personal project as well, and as a one-man band, and just sort of bootstrapping it, for want of a better word. Yeah, it was fascinating to hear about.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, but before we get into the interview, let's chat to one of our amazing sponsors and then get on with it with Troy.
Sounds good.
Struggling to reproduce problems in your code base? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring, unlike anything you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality. Try Raygun free at raygun.com today.
All right, so Troy Hunt, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Thanks for having me.
First timer on the show. Thanks for making the time to chat to us.
No worries.
I feel like so I'm the one here with the funny accent now.
Yeah.
that's what I thought when I walked in. Yeah, I didn't want to say anything.
How does it feel being the odd one out for a change?
Now, here we go.
Normally, I feel like the odd one out. Yeah. So for those of us, for those of our listeners who don't know a little bit about your background and things, you run a fairly famous website these days that they've probably heard of, but do you want to give our listeners a bit of a flavor of who you are and what you work on?
Yeah, how'd that happen? I guess like name, rank, and serial number stuff, Troy Hunt, I'm from the Gold Coast, Australia. I do a bunch of security things, a bunch of Pluralsight courses, training, speaking, blogging, and I run a little website. The website itself is little, called Have I Been Pwned. It just happens to have a rather large amount of data in it.
Yeah. More and more in the last 12 months or so, by the looks of it, too.
You know, more and more even in the last 2 months. So we're recording this, we're in March 2019, and I added 773 million records in one go in January, and I had another 760 million records just the other day. So what's that? There's like another, you know, billion and a half records.
Oh, man.
And now there's 7.7 billion records that are searchable now. And after I flip the switch on this next one, there'll be another 20 million or something as well. And it's, I guess for context, in case anyone doesn't know, it's a data breach aggregation service. So website gets hacked, data gets spread out over the internet. I grab the data, load it up into the clouds and make it searchable.
And then make it possible to go see if you've been pwned. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's really become just see how badly you've been pwned.
Yeah, you know, everybody's been pwned at this point.
This is not a Boolean question anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so how did it come to be? Like, what led to thinking, I'm going to stick this stuff on the internet and make it searchable?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It was sort of a twofold objective. So one was that I was doing a bunch of analysis on data breaches. I mean, I was writing a lot about security, and I was sort of fascinated in looking at trends across breaches. So, for example, isn't it interesting that this same person was in, say, the Stratfor data breach and the Gorkha data breach, and, my God, they had the same password. Like, what are the chances?
Yeah. You know? And like, turns out pretty high, apparently.
Well, we know people do this. We've all done it ourselves as well, let's be honest. We don't do it anymore, though, any of us.
Of course.
But it's just kind of interesting to get the tangible facts about it. And then as I was looking at these breaches, I sort of started to wonder, I don't know that people actually know that they've been in all of these incidents.
Mm.
And then the Adobe data breach hit, and that was over 150 million records in October 2013. And I was like, all right, this is actually is a lot of data. I was in there twice, my personal address, my work address. Well, then partly I was in there because I think I'd signed up to Dreamweaver. You know, I used to use Dreamweaver back in the day, and it was Macromedia, and then Adobe acquired Macromedia, and it's like, so I didn't even give Adobe my data, yet I'm in this thing now. So that was kind of part of the objective. And the other part of the objective, and if I'm honest, it's sort of equal weightings, was I wanted to build something on Azure in anger. And I was working in corporate land at the time, and I was trying to drive people particularly towards PaaS on Azure. And I wanted to get some sort of hands-on experience, and I didn't want to do Hello World. Like, I wanted to do something
legitimate. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Something to scale and everything.
Well, something that actually had a bunch of data in it, because I used table storage, and I wanted to sort of go, okay, look, let's push table storage, so we can do with it. So there was 155 million records that went in, and I thought that was a lot.
Oh, back in the day.
Felt it at the time.
Yeah, so innocent back then. So, yeah, I loaded all that in and then had the app service sitting in front of it. And then what's sort of happened over time is it's become like equal parts valuable data breach service and something that's been a great way for me to play with the technology and to push scale, because now, of course, the thing is actually big, not just in terms of the volume of data, but the volume of traffic as well.
No, definitely. And I imagine, so I think this year it's been, what is it, collection, was it, you call it collection one? Is that that's one that hit earlier this year or late last year or something?
Collection one, credential stuffing list, started circulating more extensively in January. That was sort of 750 million records just there, 750 million records.
Wow.
And this stuff just keeps coming. So it's really interesting as the thing's grown over time. One of the things that's actually surprised me is that, like, table storage hasn't crashed yet.
I was going to ask.
I'm just waiting for that moment where I get some sort of obscure message and it's like, yes, you've actually reached this arbitrary threshold that nobody knows about.
You need to move to another region.
Well, I can see what's going to happen. It's like, move to Cosmos, spend more money.
In fact,
I asked someone today, I was like, how do you think you actually move to Cosmos? And they're like, oh, there's like a PowerShell command or something. And I'm like, does that just like roll it over, or do you think it like manually inserts the record? And hypothetically, if there are 7.7 billion records,
how long do you reckon that would take?
What would happen?
So that's do I start this before the flight home or after?
I'm sure there must be, but I wonder if there's other data sets on table storage that are larger than that. That aren't just like random logs or something, that are real transactional data or something.
And that's
like
queried fairly regularly and all of that as well. Yeah.
Well, this is the thing, because now there are a slow day is 200,000 unique users on the site.
200,000.
200,000, yeah. And there's a lot more queries than that too, because people are consuming the API and doing things like this too.
Yeah.
A busy day is like 5 million.
Wow.
So, you know, now it's like this five.
Does it coincide with fresh data sets that you get those spikes?
So the real spikes, in fact, the most interesting spikes are from television exposure.
Right.
So I get big spikes, say when there's a new data set and it gets pressed and then it's in lots of different online outlets and things like this, and I see the traffic kind of ramp up quickly but steadily.
Mm.
The really interesting one, and I got smashed by Italian TV just a few weeks ago, is when it goes... I know, it's the weirdest thing. It's when it goes on TV, because what happens on TV, like live TV facing the masses on prime time, is everyone sees a URL at exactly the same time. Everyone picks up their smartphones, they type the URL in at the same time. So I was on Italian TV, and I'm looking at my, I'm trying to figure out what's going on, because I suddenly started getting alerts. Mm-hmm. Now, I moved a whole bunch of stuff into functions recently, and I was like, you know, this will solve the problem. Everything's serverless. Nothing can go wrong now. Anyway, I started getting these emails from Raygun, because there's storage exceptions and things like this, and I use Raygun for a lot of APM stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to figure out what it is, and I've gone to one of my Azure graphs, which is effectively showing the consumption of the API that sits behind the search box on the front page, and it's like, it's flat. I think it's flat. The line's so thin I can barely see it. And then there's like this massive, like Everest kind of peak. And I'm like, okay, so I'm getting DDoSed.
Yeah.
Like, obviously getting DDoSed. And I'm going through trying to figure out what's happening. Like, where's the traffic coming from? What are they hitting? And I keep seeing all these patterns, which are like, this is a really weird DDoS, because it's actually getting past anti-automation on some bits and things. And then I was like, I'll just check just in case. I'll go to Google Analytics and I'll see how many people are on the site right now, because if it's DDoS or something, that's not going to tick up.
Sure.
And, you know, you go to Google Analytics and there's this massive spike and then it's dropped off about 90% from this spike, which was only 10 minutes ago. And after dropping 90%, there are 20,000 people on the site right now.
Oh, so traffic.
So, legitimate traffic. And I did drop some requests, and I figured out later on I was dropping requests because we've got functions that stores some stuff in cache in process, but it only populates into cache in process if it's not there already, and it will go to Redis if it needs to. And because I'm cheap, I had this really, really small instance of Redis. Redis was crashing, so I fall back to SQL, but because I'm cheap, I had a small instance of Azure SQL, and it was basically just maxing out the DTs the database, doing a really, really simple query.
Right.
But, you know, you run enough of them at the same time.
Yeah.
So my next fun trick is I want to take Redis out of the picture and rejig a few things there and try and get a little bit more redundancy.
Yeah, I read a little bit about, you did a post about using table storage and sort of segmenting data in the right way and partitioning data in the right way and that sort of thing. And I thought it was a really smart way to do it. It's, you know, without having to go to some sort of massive, massive SQL box with that much data and that table storage actually works pretty well for that kind of thing.
Well, I always lamented back in enterprise land how every single time any application had to store any data of any size or any kind, the answer was always SQL. Why are we using like this massively complex relational database to store like key value pairs or something like that?
Right.
I mean, there are literally times where it would have made more sense just to like dump it in an XML file on the file system or something.
Right.
So when the time came to do Have I Been Pwned and I wanted 155 million records and I wanted it fast and I wanted it cheap, SQL Azure was just like, it just wasn't going to fly.
Yeah. Right.
And it wasn't going to fly because I would have had to max out DTU or certainly crank up DTUs a lot more to service what the traffic patterns were going to be like.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, the reality of it is that this is data that needs to be responsive on the read, but not particularly on the write. Like when I load data in, it doesn't have to all load in seconds.
Yeah, sure.
And it needs to scale in a linear fashion, which so far table storage has always done, unless I'm loading data in, and that's a really aggressive sort of query pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to be cheap. So as of today, with the 7.7 billion records, and I can't remember how many gigabytes of data in there, it's not too crazy, it's like 40 or 50 gig. With those usage patterns, it's costing like $50 a month or like something just stupid just for the storage component.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that was honestly one of the best decisions ever made. And I still have SQL Azure and I use that when people subscribe to the service. There's only 2.7 million subscribers or something, so the data's not too big. I use it when I load data to try and join across subscribers and new data sets because SQL's good at doing joins.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I scale up DTUs when I need them for a big load process and then I scale them back down afterwards. So it's kind of like, what's the best fit for the technology and how do we use the strengths of each one without just defaulting to the same old SQL for everything?
Hmm.
It's kind of had to be interesting, though, having to scale the system, how to design the entire architecture of this, taking advantage of the stuff that we have in the cloud, being very elastic, and being able to spike things up, like you're saying, on demand for a service that's like this, and not having very specific use cases that a lot of organizations aren't running into. Do you find a lot of this, and you also, I remember some of the posts that you had about how you leveraged, Cloudflare with the API caching and stuff on the front as well.
Cloudflare is amazing. Like it has fundamentally changed the way I run this service and any sort of other projects I'm involved in as well. They're all running through Cloudflare. So I started rolling over to Cloudflare when I was getting DDoSed, when people were attempting to knock the service offline. And that sort of put a stop to that really quickly, but the benefit which I've since gained is the caching. Like the caching is just massive.
Mm.
So for something like Pwned Passwords, where you can actually search for an exposed password effectively via a partial hash of the password to maintain anonymity, I'm serving more than 99% of requests to the API directly from cache.
Jeez.
And the amazing thing about that is that, first of all, Cloudflare's got 165 edge nodes around the world, so there's probably one next to you. Their CEO, his goal is to have an edge node within 10 milliseconds of 99% of the population.
Wow.
Now, if you cache everything within 10 milliseconds of 99% of your audience, think about what that means if you can just return from a local cache.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not just that they get things fast, it's that you've now unburdened your origin server. Mm-hmm. And it's not just that you've unburdened it, it's like if it's functions or any other cloud paradigm that's consumption-based, you're taking your cost way down.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
And it's not just the cost of executions of functions and things, it's the egress costs on bandwidth as well, because bandwidth is just super expensive.
Yeah.
Sure. Mm. So it's just like win-win-win all across the board. It's just a wonderful way to work. Yeah.
So the site started with, you go up there, you drop your email address and it tells you how badly pwned you are.
Yeah.
And you see all the breaches you're a part of and all that sort of stuff. Recently you launched the, is it pwned passwords
you call
it? Yeah. So that's where you go in and put, you actually put your password in and then it tells you where else it's been used in those breaches, is that right?
Yeah, no, so just come to my website, enter your password, it'll all be fine.
Yeah, but you're doing these partial hashes and it's only the first few characters or something along those lines, isn't it?
So Cloudflare came up with this implementation of the K-anonymity model, which works really well. And basically the way it works is you take the password you want to search for, you create a SHA-1 hash of it,
mm-hmm.
you then take the first five characters of the SHA-1 hash. And there's 40 characters in the SHA-1 hash, so you just take the first five and you send that to my API. So that the first thing is that if you sort of think through the logic of it, if I only know the first five characters of a SHA-1 hash, I've really got no idea what the actual password is.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So then what I do is I go, okay, here is the complete SHA-1 hash, or rather the suffix of the SHA-1 hash for every single one that matches that prefix. And then it returns on average about 500 different results. And the consumer can then say, well, is my entire hash in that set?
Mm.
So the joy of K-anonymity is that you provide just a small amount of non-identifying information, you get a large result set back, and then you find your record
in
there.
Yep.
Gotcha.
So now that service is used by a whole heap of websites that build it into their login flow, into their registration flow, into their password reset flow, and it gets hit about 8.5 million times a day at the moment.
Jeez. Nice. Yeah, I saw it showed up in 1Password.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now people using it part of their login flow. When you go set a password, correct, it can say, not a good one.
Yeah.
So a really good example of that is EVE Online, the massive multiplayer game. I've worked really close with one of the guys there, and they've built that into their process. They've sort of curated their messaging around letting people know that their password has been in a breach, but they weren't breached.
Yeah.
And maybe you shouldn't reuse them and so on and so forth.
Interesting.
There's more and more organizations doing this all the time. And because it's a totally free API, there's some really cool implementations. So Okta, for example, built an extension for Chrome where when you go and you enter a string into a password field, they will pick that up, they'll send it to the API using the anonymity model, and if it's been seen before, even if the website doesn't implement this mechanism at all, like Okta will then draw into the DOM a little div which says, hey, this password has appeared before, you probably don't want to use it.
That's really cool.
Brilliant.
I mean, it makes sense for folks like Eve. They don't want you putting in passwords that have already been pwned, right? Because it makes them less secure.
Well, they're
going to end up in the news if they get hacked, all that sort of stuff.
Well, that's part of it. The challenge for Eve, and I didn't fully appreciate this until I spent some time with them, but your Eve Online account is actually really valuable. Like, you build up these assets and inventories and things. People take it very, very seriously. Obviously, it's going to be used a lot by unsophisticated users as well, their kids or young adults or, you know, gamers, whatever it may be. And account takeover is a massive issue.
Mm.
And account takeover is an issue not just for the individuals but for the organization, because they've got all these support costs around fixing account takeover.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, that makes sense. Yeah, it was nice to see it show up in my 1Password so I could go tell exactly how bad boy I've been.
Well, that's the other really interesting use case. So if you're using 1Password, as I do as well, you can get it to go through your entire keychain of every single one of your passwords and check them all against this. And I do have passwords in 1Password which have been pwned. It's every single bank PIN and every single frequent flyer PIN, because guess what? Like, every four-digit number ever has been pwned.
Yeah. There's no more left.
Yeah, we're out.
That wasn't too hard to fix.
So do you think banks all move to something more than a four-digit?
Well, in fairness, if you think the only thing banks do is, like, compare usernames and passwords against ones in their database, you're wrong. They actually do a lot of other stuff, but the optics of it aren't real good.
Right, right. Yeah, no, fair enough.
So where is this, like, some of the things that you've, in building this site and spending so much time on the security side, what are some of, like, the unexpected things that this has kind of brought to me? I know I remember seeing one thing, surprised, through, like, we had back connection to our Plural site, I was familiar with some of the stuff that you were doing. And all of a sudden, seeing you show up on CNN one day, I was like, wait a minute.
I think along those lines, the biggest thing that surprised me is I testified in Congress about 18 months ago. And it was kind of funny, too, because I'd actually been chatting to some people there after the Equifax data breach. They had questions about how this stuff happens. And then one day they're like, oh, yeah, can you come to Washington and testify? And it's like, you know I'm Australian, don't you? are you really sure?
Does this count?
Yeah. But yeah, I did that. So I literally had to go and buy a suit and a shirt and a tie. I even had to buy, well, actually, I didn't buy socks. I got free socks from Sophos. but I didn't have anything. So I had to go and get all this
classic
stuff. Go to Congress. It
quite
went really well.
Yeah.
And yeah, like it was all over all the major news outlets and things like that, which was...
That's an experience.
Which was interesting.
Yeah, I remember you sharing like the testimony and everything. It was quite surprising to see like where this has kind of gone, what the attention has gone
for. It's massive. And the thing that surprised me a lot these days is even the use cases within government and law enforcement. And I was at an event recently where I was speaking to a lot of people in law enforcement capacities, you know, with like really heavy hitting sounding titles. And they're like, yeah, we use this all the time. And I'm like,
what for?
That is awesome. Good question. So they said a lot of them using it for education purposes. They're trying to, you know, I mean, whether you're in law enforcement or in any other sort of private enterprise, people are people and they do bad things with their online security. And part of the education programs in a lot of organizations now is go and use Have I Been Pwned. And not only see where you've been exposed, but understand that it is something that happens.
Mm.
And you've got to think really carefully about password reuse and things like that.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, that just blows my mind. You know, even now when it has become a big thing, that sort of strikes me as interesting. Yeah. The other thing that's really cool now is it is now, I was just checking the figures before I started recording, it's now the 4,806th largest website in the world.
That's actually quite high.
Well, you know, it was sitting around 20,000 up until about January, and sometimes it would dip into the teens. I was like, oh, wouldn't it be amazing to be like a top 10,000 website one day? And when that Collection 1 stuff happened in January and it got massive traction, it just, you know, I'm going to show you guys the graph just so I can hear your shock
and awe. Who's an ours?
On the...
Holy
smoke. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was literally overnight.
Like, literally
not even
overnight,
a hockey stick.
The line just went vertical.
Yeah.
But what's actually surprised me is it's still going up, right?
Yeah.
Going up and up and up.
No, that's great. I mean, it must feel good to feel that you're helping quite a bit of the world now and being safer online and all of that. And one of the things I see and I were talking about before we got started on the show was how difficult it is to explain some of these things to your parents or your kids and things like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, keeping them safe online is a big deal. And if I can go to my mother and say, here are three things that you got to do to stay safer online, I was sort of thinking about what would those things be. And one of them was go stick some of your passwords in here and go see how terrible you've been and whether you've been part of any breaches. But trying to educate people about things like two-factor auth, it's easy for techies and even... The vast majority of techies, I don't think, are still doing it.
Yeah.
But try explain that sort of technology to somebody older. They just don't grok it quite the same way as we do. And it's I think a site like Have I Been Pwned is a great step towards educating those sorts of folks.
Yeah.
So fun story, I was speaking to my mum the other day and she said, oh, I got an email from Have I Been Pwned the other day. I was like, wow, really? Okay, what's that about? And she said, it said I was in the Share This data breach. And she's like, I don't understand. Like, why am I in here? And I said, well, you know, Share This was a service, or still is a service, that would integrate into things like Facebook and it would allow you to share content. So you might not have ever sort of remembered using Share This, but at some point, you know, you shared something on Facebook. Mm. Inevitably, you granted Share This permissions to see your email address and here you are. And it was kind of funny because she's like, but I never even share stuff on Facebook. And I was like, well, yeah, you do. And she's like, no, I wouldn't even know how to. And it's like, so you're telling me you've never done the thing that you just said you don't know how to do. I have the data. You did.
I'm going to educate you right now. Yes, you have.
But, you know, this is the fascinating thing about it as well. And we're here at the summit and a lot of my mates are into, you know, they're Azure MVPs or hardcore into C#, whatever it may be. And they work with technologies that are awesome and amazing. They do super cool stuff. Their mum will never use it.
You know?
And the thing that sort of strikes me is just how cross-cutting this service has become. The fact that it is something that consumers use and that gets it in the press and that gets it in front of so many other people. And I never would have been able to sort of get that exposure with just doing the normal things I did as a developer.
Yeah.
It's interesting too. I mean, just like the two different sides it brings you. You got a whole bunch of stuff you can play with on scale and how to optimize the site and using things like Cloudflare. And then there's the whole like the subject matter about the security side of it. Security. I mean, it's two totally different audiences that you can speak to with this. Yeah. Great use case that you can play with in this whole thing.
It is, and it's. I mean, it's made my life a lot easier as a speaker and as a trainer as well, because it's like, you know, I actually have something here that's working, and I can go and talk about, you know, what's actually happening in data breach land, and then I can turn around, I can do a talk about scaling Azure or something, and they're very related, and they're all evidence-based. It's not, you know, this is not the sort of typical brochure of here's how the cloud works.
Real charts. That's what's always so interesting about the post when you're diving in like the Cloudflare, the API, the caching, everything. That's what's fun to see, is to see the impact of what one of these changes can be. It's not so much, it's not academic. I mean, it's a real thing that you're seeing happen.
Yeah. So I've been doing a series of community meetups recently for NDC conferences, because we're running a bunch of them in Australia and other parts of the world. And in this meetup, which is, I've called it, I think, Cloud Codes and Cybers or something like that. And it's just a bit of all these things. But I show this January traffic about when things went absolutely nuts. And there was about 70 million requests to the API in over a few days. And like, let's actually figure out what that cost to run.
Yeah.
So I jump into Azure, I pull all the data out of the metrics, plug it into an Excel spreadsheet, and it comes out at like, well, you just did 70-something million queries of 7 billion records. That cost $34.
Yeah. It does really prove the whole point of the cloud, doesn't it? I mean,
it's
the promise of the cloud in a lot of ways.
It does. A big part of that talk, actually, is I talk about how I stood things up on PaaS and how PaaS actually was a lot of trouble in terms of the app service. And the main reason it was a lot of trouble is I would have, like the Italian press situation previously, when I was running on the app service and I had autoscale on, and I sort of explained how, you know, autoscale is cool, but it's basically predicated on you have too much cloud until you don't have enough. Now you don't have enough, and then you have to wait while it puts on another instance.
Yeah.
And when I got massive volumes of sudden spikes of traffic because of press then, I'd lose a lot of it because the service couldn't scale fast enough.
Gotcha. Right.
So, you know, this PaaS, which I was so excited about 5 years ago, actually turned out to be problematic, and then Functions has solved that. But then, of course, I had the Italian thing and I lost traffic anyway. And it's almost like no matter how good a job you do, there is always enough traffic to screw it up somehow.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So it's going to get worse.
You can try to operate on that shoestring budget, but you're still going to have something there to be ready for when that spike happens, to give you at least that buffer to get to scale even more.
So where do you think this will go? I mean, do you have a next goal in mind? Are there things that you're thinking of where the service will go? It's obviously a free service to everybody out there. I'm imagining you want to try and keep it that way, but at some point, you know, it's going to become a absolute behemoth, and
we're past that.
And you might sort of, inadvertently become the password database for the world or something. I don't know.
I think the future, and I am starting to talk about this a bit more publicly now, is I think it'll have to get acquired at some point. And that probably sounds like a pretty natural conclusion, because the reality of it is, it's getting so big, and it's not the size of the data, it's not the volume of the traffic, it's all the support and the queries and everything that go around that. Like, I get dozens of emails every day from people that I actually reply to, and dozens more that I just simply don't because there's too many of them, around, you know, we're trying to use the API, we're not quite sure how to do it. We're an organization trying to monitor our domains. We can't do verification via one of the automated channels. There are a small handful of commercial subscribers, which I've spoken about in the past as well, supporting those people. And at the end of the day, we're in a situation where it's like Troy gets hit by a bus and it doesn't stop working, but no more data goes in.
Yeah, you know? Sure, yeah.
So
eventually the credit card is going to stop getting paid, so...
Well, we'll see.
Scott Goon might have to step up with an Azure bill, with an Azure credit or something.
I think Scott's got a pretty good ROI on how I've been paid so far for Azure. It's been a pretty good showcase.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it'll have to go that direction. I could always go down the path of going, I'm going to be the CEO of Herbert Pwn and employ people and grow it into something bigger. But
sounds complicated.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of hard work. I don't want to do all that bureaucracy and paperwork and stuff. Like, I enjoy speaking to people, I enjoy the tech. I don't want to, you know, be CEO of some startup.
Fair enough, too. Yeah. So you've got some other bits and pieces you're working on. You mentioned conferences, speaking at and training and all that sort of stuff. Is that... So would you consider, have I been pwned your day job now?
Or consulting
and speaking?
It's really, if I look at where the bulk of time and money, et cetera, is, it's not consulting. I haven't done any consulting for years now. There's so much demand for speaking. So I do a heap of workshops. I do increasingly a heap of commercial talks because there's mm-hmm. companies that are like, come in and talk and, you know,
sure.
talk about the cyber.
Tell us about stuff.
We'll pay you. So I do that. I'm involved in another project with a mate of mine, Scott Helm, who's a security guy in the UK called Report Your RI. So we do things like content security policy reporting and a whole bunch of other reporting that your browser can do. We actually process 500 million reports a day through Cloudflare at the moment, which is super cool.
Gotcha. Mm.
And that's, you know, again, there's a whole Cloudflare narrative here about how we do that, but that's an amazing project as well. So we spend a lot of time on that.
It's a real mix.
Trying to blog. I have blog sponsors and things like that too. Yep.
And then you do a weekly video?
Yeah, I've actually kept that up for 2.5 years now. So like every week, sometimes I have to force myself, if I'm honest, but
yeah.
I do try and do a video what I've been up to and industry things that are noteworthy and you know, it's not a massive thing, but it's just a constant thing that keeps ticking over, and it lets me feel like I keep contributing to the blog every week as well.
So if we finish up, what do you reckon what would be your advice of sort of three things the average person who's listening to the show should be out there doing today to go keep themselves safer? Obviously, two-factor auth and things like that, but anything that is common that you'd recommend?
In sort of the order of priorities, go get a password manager. If you don't have one, you're doing it wrong, and I don't care how smart you think your formula is, if you're not Rain Man, you're doing it wrong. because you will be reusing passwords, or they'll be weak, or they'll be
predictable. Parts of it,
And, you know, the joy of a password manager is something like 1Password. It doesn't just make you more secure, it's easier. So I log onto my iPhone, and it's like I go to a website, and I click the little up arrow, and I smile with the Face ID, and it just fills in the password, and I go. So it's great. I fill in my credit card from that rather than typing the whole thing in. So get a password manager, make everything strong and unique. Definitely the 2FA stuff, but be conscious that 2FA, like there's 2FA and there's 2FA. So, you know, there's SMS, well, we've got a whole bunch of problems with that. There's soft tokens, much better, but they can still be phished. And then we've got things like U2F tokens that support FIDO, which are great. So something
we give those away to people, by the way. We've got branded ones for our show.
Oh, sweet. Yeah.
The Solo keys, have you heard of those?
No, I haven't.
So
open source FIDO2
key.
Sweet. Well, I mean, look, this is where I want to go because this is something that can't be phished. I mean, they are super easy to use. I've actually got one cable tied into my travel bag and then I've got a backup in my desk at home. And that's an awesome way to log on. And number three, subscribe to Have I Been Pwned.
Excellent.
And remember, if you're working at a company or if you've got your own domain and you set up your own email addresses on there, you can do domain searches as well. So that there's actually, last time I checked, it was approaching half of the Fortune 500 actually use Have I Been Pwned for their corporate domains.
Just to keep an eye on where their users' accounts have been breached.
This is it. So, you know, like for argument's sake, let's say it was Apple or someone like that, you know, like they kind of want to know when they've got accounts in a data breach. Because imagine, think of the different sorts of data breaches we've seen. If it's Dropbox, they want to know about it because, like, why are Apple people using Dropbox?
Yeah.
If it's actually Madison, I suggest they want to know about that as well.
Yeah, that's super awkward, that one, isn't it? Yeah.
So hard question then. So where do you keep, I ran into this just recently, absolutely terrified me on a Friday morning. Where do you keep your master password for your password manager?
So I keep it in two places. The one is in my head.
Yeah.
So, and this is, you know, whether it's 1Password or LastPass, this sort of concept of there is one or a last password you'll ever need. With 1Password, when you sign up to their service as well, you have the option to sort of print out a recovery sheet. Mm. Now, there's a secret key that you need for 1Password. So this is one that you'll never remember. It's a generated GUID-looking thing.
Yep.
And then they have a space on there. It's like in pen, write your master password. Now this is the keys to the kingdom, so put it in a safe somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I literally have an off-site safe in a location which would take a huge amount of effort to get into.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then also I've got auth requiring 2FA as well. So gotcha. It's like you've got to get into the safe, you've got to get the thing, you've got to get my mobile device, you've got to get that unlocked. So there is a recovery process that I can access or my wife can access if she needs it, but, you know, not your average punter. Yeah.
I think they call them, the printout things, I think they call them an emergency kit.
That's it,
emergency kit. I've got them printed in the safe and filled out for both my wife and I, so.
I use LastPass and I get the thing in your head and I had a complete mental block one day and I just kept typing it in. And it's like, oh, you've locked it in, and I'm like, and I'm traveling.
Uh-oh.
Like, this is not a good time.
Well, I also put it in my 1Password, so even if I can't remember the master password, I can still biometrically unlock my phone and I can retrieve it from there.
Okay, that's smart.
And then people go, oh, isn't there security threat? It's like, well, the only way you can see it is if you're already in there.
Yeah.
And then I'm screwed anyway. Well,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're much bigger problems.
Yeah, fair enough. That's quite funny. It's like opening your, forgetting your master password, opening your laptop and getting the BitLocker recovery required. And you're like, I'm on a plane.
Yeah. I know.
I'm nine hours from
watching the movie.
Yeah.
That's another thing that I've got in my one password. Just the other day, I booted up and it's like, where's your BitLocker recovery key? And it's like,
one password. That's actually a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Hey, well, really appreciate your time, Troy. Thanks for making the time to come on the show. I know we're running around MVP Summit here in Redmond. And I saw you out last night and didn't want to interrupt you, so I sent you an email this morning and you made the time. So, thanks again for coming on the show and great to have you on.
Somebody bumped into you a few times last night. My bad. I didn't know.
Yeah, he was standing right behind you.
It was very tight. It was tight in the restaurant.
I was deep in conversation and beer last night, so I didn't notice.
Best conversations.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, thanks, great guys. Rest of your show.
Good on you.
Hey, we all know that sometimes shift happens. That's why this spring, the inaugural Shift Happens conference will be coming to Washington, D.C. on June 12th to June 13th. Hear from industry heavy hitters, change agents, and innovators as they share digital transformation wisdom. With keynotes by Microsoft's Jeff Tepper and Tony Towns Whitley, and analyst insights from Constellation and Forrester Research, this event is not to be missed. Over 2 days, find out how to get the most out of your Office 365 and SharePoint investments, and hear about the successes and failures firsthand from some of the largest and most regulated organizations. For more information, visit www.shifthappenscon.com and use the discount code CLOUDSHOW for 25% off registration for both single and group discounts.
All right, so that was Troy Hunt. I really enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, super easy guy to get along with and just chat about this thing that's kind of spiraled, not out of control, but you know what I mean? Like just blowing up on him, like become a big project.
Yeah, I don't know what your, like what the impression was, what thing that stood out to you from the interview and everything. One of the things that surprised me is like how he was showing us, you know, at one point during the interview, it shows how his site,
traffic spike.
Yeah, from Alexa.
Sorry, the ranking spike.
Yeah, and then saw the spike that it was like, it wasn't even a hockey stick.
It was literally vertical.
It was like twice, like 2x, like goes straight up, and then it stays up there too. It's still growing too.
Yeah.
But not like an overnight spike like that. That was nuts.
Yeah, really crazy. I find the whole project fascinating because it came from a sort of personal project of, I just want to play around with some real data in Azure and get it stood up and play with larger data sets in Azure and see how it goes. And now it's become a service that people use every day and subscribe to alerts for when they've been pwned in data breaches. It's just a fact of life now. And
turned into him showing up on CNN and talked about on different other national TV stations.
Testifying to Congress.
Testifying to the United States Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
nuts.
You never would have expected that to go on.
Yeah. I don't know about you. How many breaches are you in, do you know, off the top of your head?
I don't know off the top of my head. I think it was something, I mean, the last time I checked, it was somewhere around like 10 or 15.
Yeah, I think I'm about 8 to 12 or something like that.
Adobe was the one that brought my attention really to
Dropbox.
Dropbox was big, yeah.
I can't remember the other ones.
Adobe was one that really opened my eyes to it because that was the first one that didn't feel like a company was being irresponsible. That it was just something happened and it's like, oh wow. And then, you know, now it's you're almost desensitized to it because you now expect it to happen.
Yeah.
The one that I guess I do expect to happen, we talked a little bit on the show, but it hasn't happened yet, is one of the big three cloud guys gets hacked.
Right.
Right? AWS, Azure, Google. One of them, or Google Cloud Platform, watching one of those guys get hacked with something with one of their identity systems, that part is a little more, I dread the day that happens.
Yeah.
And what the fallout's going to be.
I wonder who will be first. I mean, it'll happen.
It's got to happen,
it's just a
right?
matter of time, right?
It's got to happen. Or, you know what happened? Like, let's just say, hypothetically, I'm not going to pick on anybody. Let's just say it's Azure and Azure AD, right? Say that they happen to get hacked. Is there, and they say, oh, well, they got, you know, this much information. But then they stand back and go, but it doesn't matter because everything is like so highly encrypted and it's going to take forever to decrypt away and you don't have enough information to really do anything with it. Mm. And here's how we were able to deal with it.
Mm.
I'm curious to see like the fallout of this from that. Like, you know, if they do it, then how do they react to it? How's the whole thing
happen?
I mean,
in practical terms, it may not have that big an impact, but the headlines are going to be awful.
Oh, the headlines are definitely going to be bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not so good.
Yeah. So we hope Everybody enjoyed that interview. Go check yourself out on haveibeenpwned.com. Mm-hmm. And I really like the password hashing aspect to it, where you can go find, if you've been sort of a bit naughty in the past and reused passwords, you can see where your reused passwords are, if they've been compromised, and which data breaches they're in, which I think is really fascinating. And doing it in that anonymous model.
Yeah.
One thing we didn't get into in the interview actually was he gets flamed on Twitter by some absolute trolls.
Yeah, he does.
And just copes with it like an absolute champ, which I'm not sure I could be that good a person, honestly. but there's some people that get really feisty about this. You know, like, really, you're going to go and type your password into somebody else's website and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, they have a point-ish to a degree.
Yeah.
But also the service that he provides for free to everybody is pretty phenomenal. So
his reaction to it is always funny, too. Watching his responses to it, the tweets are...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually
that's a good
point. Clinical and dismembers them slowly in front of their face. Yeah, perfect.
I would have liked to ask him about that, like what his perspective is on this whole thing. I had totally forgotten about that until you mentioned that. That's good.
Nice. Well, great to see you in person, and maybe another event in the future we'll get another show together, but great show this week. We're really lucky to get Troy on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But we do have one more thing we have to do.
Yeah. Let's break to talk to one of our great sponsors. We'll be back with the good bits.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users and organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
All right, CJ.
Yep.
We failed to give Troy a heads up. Really didn't want to sandbag him because he was on a little bit of a time crunch.
Timeline.
But would have liked to ask him, like, you know, your pick. That would have been a good one to get.
Yeah, it's okay, Troy. If you're listening to the show, we will send you one of our sweet Fido 2 keys.
Yes.
From Solo.
Absolutely.
Solo keys.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you can use them for two-factor auth.
Yep. So I'm going to ask you first. Do you have a pick for us?
I do. So my wife was away last week, so I got to watch quite a lot of TV that I wouldn't normally.
Can we talk about this on the show?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit dirty. It's a little bit pornographic. Only if you're into car porn.
Oh, okay.
So I know
totally.
You are.
Yeah, I am.
And I know you're into racing.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a great documentary on Netflix called F1, Drive to Survive.
That is,
It's season one is out, and it's all about last year's Formula One season. And each episode kind of goes through a different part of the grid. Mm. So different drivers are interviewed, different about their stories, their backstory, sort of the politics of F1, the business side of F1. Like, it's really fascinating. So if you're not really into F1, that would be a great way to learn a little bit about it.
Yeah.
And it's from last season, and I really hope they do a second season.
That's cool.
Covering this season.
Yeah, that's on my... I saw that come out. I got confused by it at first. I thought that it was the other F1 series they did with McLaren like a year ago, I think.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed that one last time. So this one, I've already got it cached on my iPad. I'm on a...
Yeah,
I go from here to Vegas for another business trip, and it's on my list to go together.
It's really, really well done. They've got amazing access to the teams, and you see them in a very candid setting. So like, they're all mic'd up having these conversations and stuff, and you're like, wow. You see a very produced side of F1, and then this documentary does a very good job of at least leaving the viewer thinking they're getting a behind-the-scenes view of what goes on.
Very cool.
How about you? What do you got for us this week?
So I'm tempted. I'm tempted to go with another Netflix thing or show that I'm watching too at the same time.
Sure.
But I'm going to hold off on that because I saw a link this past week. I showed it to you. Absolutely hilarious when I saw this, and before somebody else starts posting it and sends it in.
I've heard about this.
I have to put it out there. And it's a new library. It helps reduce the size of your project down, your JavaScript project specifically.
Oh, so like minification?
Yeah, but it actually minifies it down to 50%.
Wow.
Yeah.
How does it do that?
It's called Thanos.js, and it just randomly deletes about half your stuff.
Does it have any impact on your application working?
Significant impact. But it's a trip because there's an emoji of it, and it's the emoji with the guy doing like the shaka, the Hawaiian shaka, yeah, or surfs up.
Hang loose.
But it's got like little gems on the knuckles. So if you're not familiar with Thanos, it was from one of the Marvel movies. Mm. I forget what the name of the movie was. But it was, he has this thing that once he gets all, he has this glove, and that once he gets all these gemstones.
All the gems filled in.
Yeah, all the gems filled in, then when he just snaps his fingers, half of the universe people just disappear.
Especially building projects with Node, like sometimes I feel like just going into my Node modules folder and just randomly deleting stuff and seeing if things still work. So I give it 50-50. Like, I reckon there's a bunch of dependencies that you could probably go and nuke and not feel a thing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So that's my pick for the week is Thanos.js.
Excellent. Have you actually tried installing this thing? Can you?
Yeah, you can.
You can?
It's all available via gems, so Ruby gems. So it's mostly around in that side. But you can do it, and just the basic usage of it is pretty easy. It's just Thanos space snap dash fingers, and then there's an argument dash dash with glove.
No, it's like Russian roulette for code.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Yeah. There's the emoji too. Yeah. Awesome.
Very cool. All right. Great week. Good show. Good doing it in person at MVP Summit. And we'll be back again next week.
Awesome. Good to see you again, CJ.
You too.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.